The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Case 20 from the Book of Serenity. Dijong's Intimacy. Preface to the Assembly. Entering the essence through deep conversation mocks three and avoids four. The great road to the capital has seven vertical and eight horizontal paths. Suddenly open your mouth, lay it bare, move forward, investigate on the spot. Then you can hang your alms bowl high and break your walking staff. Yet say, who is such a person? The case. Dijong asked Fayan, where are you going? Fayan said, meandering monk travel. Dijong said, what is the point of a monk's travels? Fayan said, don't know. Dijong said, not knowing is most intimate. Fayan opened wide, great realization. And Hungjer's verse. Now participating to the full appears at this time. Completely drop the finest separation, arrive at not knowing. Let the short be short, let the long be long. Stop cutting and stitching. Accord with high, accord with low, leveling the self. A family's extravagance or frugality is a temporary function. Roaming across a fine land, sauntering about. The matter of going forth on a 30-year pilgrimage, clearly ungrateful for one pair of eyebrows. So here we are entering once again, entering this a great practice, the practice of life and death, entering into this form, this container, each one of us coming in the middle of our life. Always busy with something up until the last moment, and then we stop. We turn on our computer and close the door. We come to the temple and we vow to look into the great matter. We vow to save all beings. And of course, where are all these beings? But right here, you in all of your guises, the excited, confident one, the excited, nervous, doubting one, the one who worries, the one who is joyous. All of these selves come and go. This matter of life and death, of birth and death, does not happen at some other time. But it happens right here, right in this moment. And in this wonderful story, this wonderful koan of Dijong and Fayan, Dijong, the teacher, Fayan at this point, a student, a senior student, but will go on later to become a great teacher in his own right. From the dialogue, we can tell that Fayan is on a kind of pilgrimage. And this is something that was common in ancient China. Once you were ordained and you studied with one teacher and reached some level of understanding, you would travel around visiting other monasteries, going to other teachers to deepen your understanding. And so this interchange between the teacher and the wandering monk, Fayan, and the teacher begins with the wonderful question, where are you going? We might ask, where are you coming from? How is it right now for you? What's happening? The teacher initiating here, making an offer, making an invitation. Come, let's look into this matter. We might say that when our Jiki rings the bell, she is inviting us in the same way, inviting us every period. Let's look into it. Dong, dong. And we begin once again. So teacher says, where are you bound? Where are you going? And in this lovely translation by our dear friend Dosho Port, he says, meandering monk travel. Meandering monk travel. Another translation is, I am wandering about on pilgrimage. Wandering about on pilgrimage, this meandering monk travel. Oftentimes, many of us are looking for the straight line. Just tell me what to do. If only you make it clear enough, I will follow your instruction, and then I will get where I think I want to go. But this meandering monk travel, quite a different affair. And of course, we are all monks here this weekend, this sesshin, this timeless sesshin together. We have all left home. A monk comes from the root monas, which means one, one thing. And the great privilege of our time together here is that this structure, this form, allows us to give ourselves to one thing. And what is this one thing? But this moment, this arising, there is nothing that arises that is not it. But usually we are looking ahead, looking somewhere else, trying to fix, trying to avoid whatever. But here, just one thing. And I'm reminded of one tech leader many years ago who was asked about his success. He had started a very successful internet company. And they said, how do you do it? How do you lead in this way? And he said, the main thing is to make sure the main thing is the main thing, right? So what is the main thing of your life? Of course, this tech giant who was greatly revered, his company collapsed several years later and have not heard of him since. But still, I think good advice won't save you or me. But I do think that our life somehow comes into alignment when we remember what we are doing. So hard to remember. We forget. We're carried away again and again. And our practice of Zazen is not the practice of some kind of steady state, but it is the practice of returning. Coming back, wandering away, getting lost, getting discouraged, coming back, wandering away, coming back, having insight, wandering away, coming back, wandering and wandering and wandering. And so this pilgrimage, we might say we are all pilgrims. A first step of a pilgrim is to leave home. And we have all done this, whether you are sitting in your apartment or home looking at your Zoom screen, or whether you are here in the temple, we have all left the daily routine. We have all interrupted, we might say, the mindless forward momentum of our life. And we have interrupted this mindless forward momentum in order to penetrate and study. And how do we study? Where are we going? I am wandering about on pilgrimage. As I was thinking about this, I was reminded of the Celtic Christian tradition of pilgrimage called peregrinatio. And this peregrinatio was an image and a practice revered by the early Celtic Christians. And the image of it is setting out to sea in a round boat with no paddles. And so the destination of this pilgrimage is wherever you happen to be, wherever the wind blows you. One teacher talked about this peregrinatio, this kind of pilgrimage, as leaving one's homeland and wandering for the love of God. Leaving one's homeland and wandering for the love of the Dharma. This kind of pilgrimage, this wandering about the destination is not somewhere else. But this pilgrimage requires this first step of leaving, leaving what is comfortable, leaving ordinary life that though we complain about our busyness and our many responsibilities, we often hold tight to them as at least we know who we are. I'm the one who's too busy. I'm the one whose life is out of control. And we might say on pilgrimage, we take refuge not in ourselves, not in what we have created, but we take refuge in the Dharma and the Sangha. We take refuge in this schedule of sesshin. We take refuge in these forms that though they may seem strange at first, these forms that hold us and allow us to be here. You don't have to worry about the schedule of your day. The schedule is set and the bells will ring. And so we practice coming here. We practice being here. And the teacher, Dijang, says, what is the point of a monk's travels? Or what is the purpose of your pilgrimage? What is the point? What is the main thing? And Fayan says so wonderfully, don't know. I don't know what the point is. And this not knowing, of course, greatly revered in our tradition in this Zen way, this not knowing echoes the wonderful story of Bodhidharma's encounter with the emperor and the emperor asks, who are you? And Bodhidharma says, don't know, no knowing. This wondrous don't know. Of course, we may think we know and have all kinds of opinions, and we do. A healthy functioning mind creates a stable image of the world, a stable image of the self. This is all necessary and important. And here in our practice, we are not trying to destroy that, but just to see that whatever opinion you hold, no matter how tightly you hold it, is just a thought, is just part of this vast coming and going. In the Harry Potter books, one of my favorite ones is the last one, and I don't remember too much about it, except that throughout the whole book, Harry Potter knows he's on some kind of pilgrimage. He's supposed to save the world. He's supposed to go to the right place and do the right thing. And he has no idea what to do, no idea where to go. He is an exemplar for all of this. If you think you know what you're doing in your practice, just wait a round or two. This sesshin, the structure of sesshin, is designed to disturb you. That at some point, all of us on sesshin lose our bearings. And usually when we lose our bearings, we scramble as quickly as we can to regain our footing, to find the ground. And we may think that good Zen students are very grounded. I would say that good Zen students are sometimes very grounded, sometimes traversing the vast realms of the universe, lost. This is all part of the territory. In his verse, Hungjur says, let the short be short, let the long be long. Let the mountains be high and the valleys be low. The point of our practice is not about evening things out. The point of our practice is about being where we are. Linji speaks of the wondrous functioning. Your wondrous functioning in this moment is no different than the wondrous functions function of the Buddhas and the ancestors. This functioning of life, we might say taking refuge in Buddha, taking refuge in this aliveness. As we practice round after round, breath after breath, of course, opinions and mind states come and go. This is how it is for human beings. And we practice allowing what is here to be here. So if here is contraction and confusion, then we say, of course, you are the Buddha of contraction and confusion. If you have many problems, you are the Buddha of many problems. No problem. We are all wandering. We are all being held and guided. The Dharma is something that is utterly trustworthy, and not trustworthy in the sense that it will take you where you want to go, and it is not trustworthy in the sense that you will get what you want. Sometimes you may get what you want, and of course, sometimes you will get what you don't want. And our practice here on Sesshin is to welcome, to appreciate what is here. You don't have to know what you're doing. There is no knowing, but there is a way that we can align. We can practice this aligning with this moment, with the energy of this moment is all of the energy of the universe. The energy of this moment is the consequence of your whole life. Up to this moment, it has led to this particular moment. And so often we reject what is here because we're looking for something. But this practice is saying yes again and again. Oh, this. And whatever is arising for you, and this feels so important to say over and over, whatever is arising for you is not just personal. We live in a culture that psychologizes everything, and we're taught we should figure out why we don't feel good and fix it, figure out who to blame and make it different. This practice of Zen is not about that. The Buddha's teaching so clear. Sometimes we feel good, sometimes we feel terrible. Not a problem, but how do we meet whatever arises? It is not arising just because you have not done enough work. Whatever is arising is not because somehow you are wrong or broken not advanced enough. What is arising is the Dharma itself. Calling to you, offering you the opportunity of this moment. Sometimes we talk about windows of opportunity and need to make sure you take this window of opportunity. In Zen, we say every moment is a window of opportunity. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. I vow to enter this moment as best I can. And even our resistance to entering is part of the moment and not a problem. What is the purpose of your pilgrimage? Don't know. And Zhang says, not knowing is most intimate. And that this yawn opened wide great realization. As we go deeper and deeper, all of us on a pilgrimage, all of us wanderers, all of us home leavers. Melissa's lovely reminder from Dogen, or encouragement to throw yourself into the house of the Buddha. The house of the Buddha is not the house next door. It is the house right here. And this throwing ourselves, this is not about figuring it out. It's not about being a good Zen student, but about giving yourself to this moment, about following your feet, following your breath already given to you, breathing in and breathing out. Nowhere else to be, nothing else to accomplish. Let me finish by reading the koan and the verse one more time. Dijang asked Fayan, "Where are you going?" Fayan said, "Meandering monk travel." Dijang said, "What is the point of a monk's travels?" Fayan said, "Don't know." Dijang said, not knowing is most intimate. Fayan opened wide, great realization. And Hung Chur's verse, now participating to the full, appears at this time. Completely drop the finest separation, arrive at not knowing. Let the short be short, let the long be long. Stop cutting and stitching. Accord with high, accord with low, leveling the self. A family's extravagance or frugality is a temporary function, roaming across a fine field, sauntering about. The matter of going forth on a 30-year pilgrimage, clearly ungrateful for one pair of eyebrows. Thank you. So please sit comfortably, and people at the near the altar, make our U shape so we can see each other. We'll have our Dharma dialogue in a moment. And we'll be passing the microphone here in the Zendo so that people online can hear us. And I will go back and forth between people on screen and people here in the Zendo. Comments, questions, Bix.
Thanks for the talk, David. So what to do when the mind comes to a conclusion?
How does the conclusion work for you?
Usually doesn't.
Yeah. There certainly are insights. And when we think we have it, maybe hold on to it, see if it's the real thing. But it will probably wear away, whatever it is. So maybe just noticing, oh yeah, I'm in the place where I think I've got it. Hang out there. What's it like? See what happens. Yeah. Thanks, Six. And L on Zoom.
Yeah, thank you. I like let the short be short and the long be long. And the point of Zen is to not even things out. Because I often, in the images I get from our readings in the Sutra book, it does seem to be evening things out. When it talks about the field of boundless emptiness, I have an image of a cream of wheat on a huge scale. It's not, for someone who loves detail, it's problematic. I want the particular, and so many of our images of emptiness are mush.
Yeah.
That's it.
So that's an interesting interpretation. very different from my understanding that the Probably. Particularity of things is one of the Dharma gates into understanding. And if we just do cream of wheat practice, there actually was a big revolution in Zen that accused a whole bunch of lineage traditions. This was, I don't know when this was, a long time ago, of silent illumination as just the worst thing you could do. It was accusing people of practicing cream of wheat style. And so we have to go with what awakens our hearts beyond the conclusions, beyond the stories and narratives that we're doing, and really see that everything is coming towards us, demonstrating itself in its particularity, like you are right now, like Bix just did. This is an amazing thing. So the conclusion you reached about cream of wheat is really interesting. But then you want to, you know, just like I love what you said, Bix. What do I do when I come to a conclusion? Well, you sit with that and don't buy it. Even if you're really buying it, you know, it's like, this is it. Now I understand. always a little bit of doubt, or a great deal of doubt. Yeah.
And the next time you have cream of wheat, look closely, look really closely. There's beautiful undulations and specks and all sorts of things going on there that we can easily miss.
Yeah, great, thank you. And someone, Anne.
Chad had first.
What? Okay, Chad, go first. Yep.
Thank you. Feel confused and defeated, and I don't want to be here.
Wow. And so, do you have a problem? Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Because I guarantee that everyone else around this circle and on the screen knows this place, right? This is how human beings feel sometimes. So as we talk about our vow, it's not to practice really hard so we feel good. It's much more radical than that. For you to demonstrate your great faith and courage, discouraged and confused. And what do you do? You sit and breathe in and out. So there's something about staying, not running away, no need to fix anything. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I don't think the handheld mics are working.
Can you hear this now?
Only through the room mics.
Okay. We're going to fix that. Some things can be fixed.
Okay.
Working out.
How's this, Corwin?
That's much better. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Thank you,
thanks,
Michael.
Corwin.
Yep.
Marla.
David, I wanted to thank you for that talk because from everything from not knowing to the feeling of groundlessness, to trying to be a good Zen student. It's like you have not only been in my recent Dokusans, but you've been in my brain. And honestly, it's freaking me out a little bit. Maybe that's the mark of a good universal talk. Maybe you've been in all of our brains. But I was thinking about not knowing, and there's almost a dizzying thing to it. It's like every time I try to not know, then I will come up to knowing something. But then I have to let go of that and not know. And I feel a little bit like a dog chasing my tail. But maybe that is also Zen. But thank you for freaking me out, though, by being so on point.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, Marla, when David was talking to Chad just now and saying, I bet there isn't anybody here who hasn't had these thoughts. It's all the things together, right? And there's also a very specific uniqueness to you and to Chad. There's nobody actually else who has the same feelings, same body, same thoughts. And yet there's enough universality. I loved what Michael said about the cream of wheat. You know, we put a label on our constructions in our construction business of the self. And we say these things, and it's so important to say them out loud and be witnessed and heard. It's so important to know that you're not alone, but also there is a uniqueness that arises in every human heart. So it's not that David knows your mind specifically, but David knows minds through the study of his own mind and also by the privilege of people coming forward and saying, I am feeling this now. Then we all get to have a glimpse of this unique universality. The cream of wheat is not nothing. Even with our first teacher, we used to face the wall when we sat. And, you know, there's nothing there, except there is. I remember facing a wall and suddenly the wall came alive with all this texture and color, and it was just a white cloth wall. This is how we need to look at ourselves too. what is here now? And then when we reach that conclusion, we also go, oh, a conclusion just happened. And maybe we hang out with that for a while because it's so yummy. But after a while, it's a bitter taste. And then we go back to, what is it? What is it? And not knowing is the most intimate. There's a wonderful bunch of commentaries on this koan that are traditional that Dosho retranslated. And, you know, there's a point in the koan tradition where a teacher says, not knowing is delusion. Don't try to let go and not know. And also knowing is false. You can't know anything. So then where do you go? So it's not knowing, it's knowing. It's everyone feels the way I feel. Nobody feels the way I feel. And this is what we learn to be intimate with. Thank you.
Thanks. Someone else here in the Zendo? Yeah, Anne.
Thank you for the talk. Is this working? Yes. Okay.
Can you hear Anne?
Okay, yes. Good. Yes. All right. So I start to think about the eyebrows and wondering if that's kind of like a metaphor sort of for like our uniqueness and somehow being able to appreciate. I mean, because we all have different eyebrows and of course we may not like them. So I was thinking about that and also thinking about, okay, like being with the eyebrows and as opposed to the searching and the wandering that came sort of right before something about the eyebrows.
Yeah, well, wonderful to notice where we get caught, right? The eyebrows, you might imagine going searching for your eyebrows. And you could search for 30 years pilgrimage. Where are my eyebrows? Where are they? Right? Where is my true self? Where is my true self? All the time, right here. But all of these, right? I like the way I am. I like my eyebrows. I don't. Too much, too little, too high, too low. All the opinions. And in that verse, he's... it's so easy when we hear a koan, we think, okay, well, I just need to go on pilgrimage. I just need to do something else. So both extolling, yes, you must be a pilgrim, but don't think there's anywhere to go or anything to get. Already, all of our eyebrows are doing quite fine, despite everything that comes and goes. Yeah, thanks. Matt.
Thank you for the talk, David, and for the discussion. I'm in this early sesshin period. There's sort of like this, my one word was settling, and there is sort of like this, I'm settling in. And when I get the dishes done, I'll get that done tomorrow morning, and then maybe I'll sweep up the kind of mess on the floor, and I'll get to the place where I can have concentration. There's sort of like we're early in here. I've got some time, and this is it right now.
Yeah.
And I was especially moved with what Chad said because, maybe it's like this psychological defense. Yeah, I feel the same sense of lostness, but I have an ability to say, oh, but coming soon, you know. So, but it, kind of cutting through that, it's like, what is this right now?
Wonderfully said, Matt. And I so appreciate you naming this tendency. We can think, okay, well, it's a 3-day sesshin, so I'm going to take it easy here in the beginning, and then I'll get to it. Probably tomorrow will be really good, and I'm right. And one, none of us know whether we will be here tomorrow. There have been people who have had to leave sesshin, so you may think there is tomorrow, but we don't know for any of us. And then two, I think in our practice, we come to these places where we lose our bearings. And as Marla was saying, it's just confusing. And usually we think, well, this is wrong. I need to kind of back out. Let me get out of this place and find some true place. And Matt, I appreciate you saying this is the true place. And indeed, the spaciousness and the freedom that we long for is wildly disturbing. We have to practice allowing ourselves to be spacious because we're not used to it. We're, you know, you live like this the whole time and it starts to open up. You think, what's wrong? Something's wrong here, right? So when you feel spacious, just hold on tight. Don't worry. It'll pass. but it is something that arises that is different. No need to wait. Whatever is here.
I appreciate that. You're pointing to something that we all do. It's the tendency to want to engineer our own awakening project.
Yeah,
first we're going to suddenly, and then this is going to happen. Three days, but it's just pushing us way further away from what's right here.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Yes, Will. Can we get the microphone back to Will?
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the that sort of anxiety about what's happening, the spaciousness you were just talking about, and that's something I've experienced a lot. And I think it relates to, so I have a confession to make, which is that I'm apparently really tired, and I was in that sort of dozing zone as you were talking. I love your talks, David, and I was sort of just barely conscious. And so I had a very interesting experience, and that is that there was a kind of an image I got somewhere along the way where I thought, so what I'm thinking of is it's like actually there's this body of what river. I'm a river or something like that, or we're all river, the same, I don't know, something. And then there's a little glint, you know, a little highlight where the sun hits it. And I think, oh, that's me. And then the other ways that I experienced, I mean, it's going to change the metaphor a little bit, but that eye, that glint wants to help. It gets really involved and says, oh, I can show you that you're not me, right? I'm sort of going in a circle here, but it just, in this dozing state, I've been becoming more aware of this, that I think that I am very much in the habit of, I'm comfortable with being a person who kind of gets it, but not really. There's something else. And then that becomes the sort of fixation. So I repeat that drama for myself. And it's sort of, you know, at the same time, it's me trying to help myself. And the result is a me who is constantly in the, you know, well, eventually something might happen, but I'm not the kind of person who just gets it. And, you know, so it's terribly circular. It's really, but thank you. I mean, it was a great moment in my half awareness.
Yeah, I appreciate it. A couple things. One of the verses we sometimes chant is the "so you should see this fleeting world, so you should see yourself a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning." So this glint that appears on the moving river, the vast cosmos, all of us are little flickerings in the moment. And so again, some insight, and then the ordinary self says, well, let me help with that insight. That's a great one. Let me take it for you.
Yeah.
Right. And then we create the new identity as the one who is the glint helping, as you say. And it's what Matt and what Michael just said, too. So the self will constantly reappear.
Yeah.
So whatever happens, the self will reappear and say, okay, great. Let me help out. You got it. And this is just what the self, you know, the dog barks at the mailman. Woof, woof. Uh-huh. It's just what it does. Not a bad thing, but to begin to see. So there is this recognizing that. I'm in the place where I'm helping again. And so whatever insight, we have to let that go. Because as we say, today's awakening becomes tomorrow's delusion, mm-hmm. right? Oh, I've got it, and I'll keep it, you know, right in my pocket here. So if I ever need to, right? Yeah. So and constantly then, yeah. going, yeah, yeah.
I can just say, yeah, I just realized it's absolutely that. And the weird twist of it is that I know I can't hold on to these insights. So it actually confirms the self as
right.
someone.
Yeah, yeah. Heard. It's brilliantly circular. Yeah.
Oh, I'm just afraid I didn't understand, but I want to tell you what I've heard and how really exciting it is that you have this little glimmer that's so helpful. Because I think for myself that if everything really is the Buddha Dharma, all the different parts of the self, the parts that are just like ready to give up and the parts that are in despair and the parts that are, wait, I had an insight, let me help. They're all equal. Delusion too is, it's just part of the Buddha Dharma. And so this becoming spacious and not favoring anything, even not favoring, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. This is very reassuring to me that that nothing's wrong in this practice. Mm-hmm. This is why we can't judge our own practice, because we judge right and wrong. You know, I fell asleep during David's talk. You're not the only one, by the way.
Who else?
I'll tell you. I have to admit, I think it was just one time, fell over and hit my head. But I saw a few of you being sleepy, because who got any sleep last night? I mean, if you did, that's great. So everything is just perfect. And then it's including, it doesn't feel perfect, that thought. You know what I mean? And what you said, well, the circularity of it, there's nowhere to go with this. There's just now. What is it? And imagine, I like to imagine sometimes that somebody, you know, that the Dharma in its embodiment of the Buddha, which could be another person or the coolness of the air, whatever, is putting its hand on my shoulder and going, yep, you're doing fine. This is it too. Mm-hmm. And all our desires to be helpful. Great. How wonderful that is to be helpful. Mm-hmm. How wonderful it is to be reactive and protective and to put up our protective walls. There isn't anything that shouldn't be happening. What we're recognizing, you know, thanks to what you said and what Matt said and what everybody said, is it arises like this. And everybody's nodding. And that's very, very comforting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. Maybe just a couple more. Esther?
So, I will join in feeling kind of in a muddled state. But what really, there was two sentences that hit me. The thing about the 30 years of pilgrimage. And then, was it ungrateful for this pair of eyebrows? Or was the word ungrateful there or no?
Yes, clearly ungrateful.
Clearly ungrateful.
Pair of eyebrows.
Right. So, and also here, sitting here, not quite knowing what cream of wheat is. But I'll try to end it in some way. But when those two, second time when you said that sentence, I know that longing, and I've often thought of, you know, the monks that walked around for 30 years to different monasteries. Mm. And I thought, oh, that could be so great. I would like to do that. Yeah. And then when we heard these lines tonight, not tonight, it feels like tonight here, I know it's the morning over there. I thought, but the two eyebrows, you know, my life, my pilgrimage in some way, not different. Mm-hmm. That, you know, as I put one foot in front of the other in everyday life, I am already on pilgrimage too, in some way. And so what is it that I imagine I would be doing walking around for 30 years in India that would be different than right now here?
I love what you just said, Esther. For me, that's it, the recognition. Even though we've all come a long way to get to the temple or even to get to our Zoom screen, it isn't really necessary, because we can bring, and this is one reason why we're having so many Sesshin opportunities, it begins to weave into daily life in a way that we can have recognitions like that. You know, when I get into my car and turn it on, that's everything. And also just informationally, I think it's wonderful that a Danish person doesn't know what cream of wheat is, because when I've been in Denmark or any of the Scandinavian countries, it would be unheard of to eat something so processed. It's just the dullest ground up porridge that has no substance to it at all. It's made out of wheat, not oats. And it's bland as all heck.
So I want to speak for cream of wheat. It's creamy and you eat it and it's nourishing. If you put M&Ms in, they get different colors in the cream of wheat. So we can have different opinions.
Yeah, we could have this cream of wheat school and the party porridge school. But you understand what the metaphor was now.
Yeah, and then it does resonate with what arose for me, because that was, you know, sometimes when life is like that too, like really bland and just kind of whitish with no distinguished figures, there is some deliciousness in that too.
Well, I think that's just what Michael was saying before, you know, when we think that there's nothing there, right, look closer.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Esther. Maybe one more here in the Zendo. Someone else? Yeah, Zeph.
I'm sorry, I can't resist saying, Esther, it's what WD-40 is made out of. We had a joke, because in the summer session there was cups, that was the metaphor. It wasn't cream of wheat, it was WD-40. And of course, they don't have it in Denmark.
So. Yeah, great. Yeah.
I don't know why my brain's being so weird today, but very something trenchant or something. No. Why is it if not knowing is the most intimate, we all sit around here going, knowing laughs and we all know, you know, we're here. Why are we here? I don't know.
I'm thinking maybe there's a way to steer into the not knowing, and that seems very scary to me. And I, even now, see? And I'm doing it too. It's so what we're doing. But the opposite of that would be kind of insane. You know, like today's enlightenment becomes tomorrow's delusion. What if it was like today's delusion becomes tomorrow's enlightenment? And it's like, oh shucks, what happened to that delusion? Opposite world. Anyway, I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's a stupid thing to say. but I love that today's delusion becomes tomorrow's enlightenment. And what Melissa quoted, who was it that said that knowing, not knowing is delusion, nantran, not knowing is delusion, knowing is... blankness. So not knowing is blankness, knowing. Yeah, so we're caught. I think it goes a little bit back to what Will is saying, and I appreciate we're caught whatever way we go, right? There is a circularity. We say not knowing is most infant, and I blab on for 25 minutes, and then we have this Dharma dialogue. I appreciate you pointing to don't be fooled. Don't think you understand. There is something much more wondrous. And all these words are it and not it. No place to come down. Don't be lost. Don't think not knowing is it. Don't think knowing is it. Let's just practice a little bit more. Thank you.
Just want to say one thing. Yeah. I really appreciate you coming forward in your state of, you know, that whatever is happening for you. It really was, I could feel it. The one thing I think is not as helpful is the question why. You know, that this there's just no help there. Just, yeah, all this confusion. Yep, exactly.
Great.
And I know it's probably not helpful, but I want to repeat what I said earlier, but in a different way. And there's a teacher in our lineage tradition in India called Nagarjuna, who described the world in four separate ways. And they're called the four propositions of Nagarjuna. One is that things are as they are. And another one is that things are not as they are. And the third one is that things are both the way they are and not the way they are. And the fourth one is things are neither the way they are, nor are they not the way they are. What that all translates to is that every single thing that people are saying is true in some way, right? Delusion becomes enlightenment, enlightenment becomes delusion. Don't know, have an insight. All of these things, and human minds don't seem easily capable of putting it all together. We flicker from one thought to another, and we think, that's it. One of the things that happens in Zazen through the stillness and silence that I've seen again and again and again is that suddenly it's possible to be so spacious that everything that's arising as a seeming opposition is seen through.
Now, let's go back to our Zazen. So please restore the Zendo.